Hello, I'm Ben Shaw, and you're listening to Out the Gate, the podcast about sailing and adventure on and around San Francisco Bay. And today's show is sponsored by Blue Heron Battery. Are you thinking about installing lithium batteries on your boat? Well, I just did, and I know personally that there are lots of advantages, including less weight, faster charge times, more usable power, and longer lifespans compared to other types of batteries. But I also know that understanding the ins and outs of installing lithium can be a real challenge, which is exactly what drew me to Blue Heron Battery and Hank George. Because Blue Heron batteries are made with high-quality cells. They come with a great warranty. They provide Bluetooth access to all these amazing parameters. You can watch what your batteries are doing in real time. And they're available at an exceptional price. Blue Heron was recommended to me by multiple cruisers who I trust a great deal. And boy, does Hank know his stuff. He walked me through the whole process, helped me determine what I needed in my boat in a very helpful, straightforward manner. My new Blue Heron batteries are in. I was charging them this weekend. I was actually running power tools off of them through the inverter. I was very pleased. It was amazing to be running a vacuum and a multi-tool all at the same time off of my battery. So I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled with the installation, and you can find out more and get your own Blue Heron batteries at blueheronbattery.com. Today's show is also sponsored by Sun-Powered Yachts. There are so many benefits of having solar on your boat, especially in conjunction with lithium batteries. Solar gives you clean, quiet, abundant power, and today's panels are so much more efficient than they used to be that even if you already have panels, you might want to look at upgrading. And if you're looking for new panels, controllers, wiring, or just someone to talk to about doing an installation or an upgrade, you should contact Lyle and Katie at Sun-Powered Yachts. They know their solar, and as sailors themselves, they cater to the boating community. Now, I met Katie and Lyle at the Richmond Boat Show pre-pandemic and had Katie on the podcast way back on episode 10. And after talking to them, I knew that when it was time for me to buy solar panels for my boat, I was going to reach out to them. And I am in the process of installing new Maxeon 415-watt panels from Sun-Powered Yachts to charge up my lithium batteries and let me go for days without running the engine. Also, listeners in the Bay Area should know that panels are available for pickup in Hayward, California, which will save you a bundle on shipping. Find out more and order your panels at sunpoweredyachts.com. Lastly, you can support the show by becoming a Patreon patron of Out the Gate. Not only will you help keep the show going, but you become eligible for special benefits such as extra content and swag. There's a great Out the Gate t-shirt that I've sent all patrons. The podcast takes time and costs money to keep doing, so I really appreciate all the support. Head on over to patreon.com/outthegate. Sign up for as little as $5 a month. Okay, this week, Jim Hancock comes back on the show to update us about the Sailing Science Center. Years ago, Jim conceived of a hands-on interactive learning center that would inspire a passion for sailing and science by delighting people through play and discovery. Now, I talked to Jim 4 years ago. Since then, the center has come a long way. They're up and running with regular programming and an army of volunteers. In fact, this coming weekend, on June 24th, you can catch up with Jim, see, and play with Sailing Science Center exhibits at the Oakland Yacht Club's Summer Solstice event. It runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, the 24th, at the Oakland Yacht Club, which is in Alameda, at 1101 Pacific Marina Avenue. I hope after listening to this interview, you're inspired to come out. Okay, let's jump right in. All right, Jim, I am so excited to have you back on the podcast. Why don't you tell people, first of all, where we are? Because before we even began this podcast, you just gave me a tour of this amazing building in which we're sitting in the bowels of.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start, Ben. We are in the basement of Building 1 on Treasure Island. This used to be the Pan Am building back in the late 1930s, actually, 1939, and then was very quickly taken over by the U.S. Navy. So this was Navy property for most of its life. And where we are is in the Sailing Science Center World Headquarters, which is our 225-square-foot office in the basement of Building 1. And it's a treat to have you here and to be recording from this location.
It's a treat to be here and just to be surrounded by the renderings of the Sailing Science Center and some of your exhibits here, some of the amazing models that you have, cross sections of masts. But this is only just a very small taste. We should say right off, this is not where people should come to expect the museum. It's just the office. But this is the seeds. This is where it's all starting to germinate from.
Right. This is our headquarters. I'm going to emphasize that the address on our website is our office address. There's no particular office hours. If you want to see the Sailing Science Center, you won't see it here.
Has anybody showed up, knocked on the door and said, "Where's the Sailing Science Center?"
Not yet.
Okay. Well, we want to prevent that. But there are ways to see what you're up to. We will get to that. Before we do, I just want to stay a little bit more on this building because the history is amazing. And you just walked me around. There's an amazing mural that you said may be the largest mural?
At the time that mural was painted, it was 1975, I think we figured out.
Yeah.
It was believed to be the longest mural in the United States.
Wow.
And it depicts naval history from the beginning of the U.S. Navy up until 1975.
And if anybody doesn't know the location we're talking about, it's a half circle building can you see it as you drive across the Bay Bridge?
You can. It is not easily.
It's a little more obstructed by new
construction
now.
You can definitely see it from the Embarcadero. It's very, very visible from the Embarcadero in San Francisco, like from the ferry building.
We're on the west side of Treasure Island, which is changing. I mean, it's changed so much since the last time I was here. I don't know when that was, a year, 2 years ago, but there is just an astounding amount of change happening here. Tell us a little bit about what's happening right now.
Yeah, you know, this is a $6 billion development, and it started with the Navy base closures in 1997, during the Clinton administration, and there were three Navy bases that were closed. There was the Mare Island shipyard, there was the Navy base, Naval Air Station on Alameda, and Naval Station Treasure Island were all slated to be closed. And then what happened was that there was really about a 20-year planning effort to figure out what to do with this, and also hazardous waste remediation from when the Navy had been here, and various things. So this big development was planned. The next stage was what they call horizontal development, which is putting in infrastructure. The plan was to go, or is to go, from roughly 2,000 to 3,000 people on the island to about 10 times that. So,
wow.
25,000 to 30,000 people on the island, and so they do this horizontal development, which is the infrastructure consisting of water, sewage, electrical and getting all that laid out. And they have only just recently, in like last year or two, started what's called the vertical development. But a lot of this stuff is going in a modular form. So when they put these buildings in, they seem to appear overnight.
Yes, it's like, right? Legos.
And so you wake up one morning and there's a new building and you go, oh, that went in overnight. The reality is that it's been a process that's more than 20 years in the coming.
Yeah.
Now, I should add that it was just a week ago today that the first of the new housing was opened on Treasure Island. It's a building called the Maceo May Apartment. Maceo May was a person, that's a person's name. And this building is run by an organization called Swords to Plowshares. And it is for homeless veterans, for formerly homeless veterans.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I saw an article on the front page of the Chronicle about a gentleman, a homeless veteran, who is now living in his new home here.
Right, and that would have been timed for that. And so they had the ribbon cutting last Thursday. London Breed, Mayor London Breed, was there. Our District 6 supervisor, Matt Dorsey, was there. Kind of everybody who's anybody related to Treasure Island was at this event.
Where is that in the geography of the island? Is that on
it
this
is,
end? Or?
It is on the west side of the island.
Okay.
It's in a little bit from the shore, but you could easily see it from the Embarcadero or from the bridge.
Are there neighborhoods of Treasure Island? Are there names of different areas, or is that yet to happen?
There are, and they have been mostly named. I am now on the Treasure Island Citizen Advisory Board. That's one of the things that actually we get to review those names. And so
interesting.
We have had, as an advisory board, we have had an opportunity to give some feedback on those.
It's so fascinating to watch a community form. I mean, from the ground up, I'm driving through here and you see the streetlights that aren't yet working because they're not hooked up. And the infrastructure, like you said, it's there, but it's not fully formed. So it's really fascinating to watch this happen. Talk about your involvement in Treasure Island and how that has come about.
That goes back to not quite the earliest days, but definitely the early days of the Sailing Science Center. The concept for the Sailing Science Center goes back to 2013. That's the first recorded documentation I have. And the original concept was this really exciting sailing school with high-performance boats and outsized emphasis on really having a cool classroom. I thought as a sailing coach and instructor that we could do a lot better than a whiteboard and dry erase markers. That also comes from my background as a marine engineer and, you know, somebody who just likes science and STEM in general.
Yeah.
So I thought we could do better. The trouble with that vision, it was going to be called the Fast Angles Sailing School.
And for people, I remember you mentioning
for
that,
people
yeah.
who are sailors, you'll understand what that means. It's just getting the right angle on the wind. But it didn't pencil out. It was going to be just an enormous amount of work and money, and we weren't going to make any money, and I could see that. And the reason it didn't pencil out was that it lacked scale. Mm. If you could scale it up, then it would pencil out. And so it was a couple of years later after that, and the idea was still in mind, that I started coaching a race program on Treasure Island. And this is where the connection got made, because the original collaborator back in 2013, Martha Blanchfield and I, we had been looking for, like, what would be the ideal location. We actually looked at a building in Sausalito mm-hmm. as a potential location to do this. But I then started coaching this race program on Treasure Island and was working with Travis Lund.
Who's been on the program.
Okay. And Travis was at his desk one day, and he knew what I wanted to do with this classroom component to the teaching. And we had talked about it and how we could do some really exciting stuff in the classroom. And I kind of had in mind that we could do it at the Treasure Island Sailing Center in their classroom. And I came in off the water, and Travis was there at his desk. And I just picture this like it was yesterday. He had this blueprint rolled out on his desk, and it was the blueprint of Hangar 3, which is one of the historic airplane hangars on Treasure Island. He says, do it here. What came out of that was an entirely new idea, which was, this doesn't just have to be for sailors. Yeah. This, if we do this right, this can be interesting to the general public. And the analogy is the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. Millions of people go through the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. But it wasn't designed for astronauts and pilots. It's designed for the general public. And so this was sort of a transitional moment. It's like, if we do this right, we do this so it's designed for the general public. Now, also, having said that, the Air and Space Museum, maybe a small fraction, but a fraction of the people who go through that are going to get so inspired that they're going to say, this is cool. I want to do this. I was telling this story to one of our board members. This would have been about 2020. And I was telling him this story, and he says, "That's me." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "That's me. I went through the Air and Space Museum, and because of that and another experience I had, I decided to study aeronautical engineering."
How cool.
And, what's funny about that is I came up with that analogy not knowing anybody who had actually had that experience, but one of our board members actually was that example.
Was that example. Well, having grown up outside of D.C., I can say that was one of my favorite museums to go to. And now they had the Edward Hazy Center, which is out near Dulles, where they have a huge building with all the airplanes in them. I think they have one of the Pan Am China Clippers. But that just brings to mind, you could have boats that people could climb on and get inspired.
Yeah, absolutely. With sufficient scale and funding, some of the things we can do are incredibly cool, Ben. It starts to look like Disneyland, right?
Yeah,
if you can put people on a model interior boat that is gimbaled, right?
Yeah, give them a sense.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, this is what motion sickness feels like.
Yeah. You have gone from conception to reality. You are not yet in Hangar 3, but you actually have exhibits that you show, and I've seen a lot of them. I've seen people interacting with them, and it's fantastic to watch. Talk about what you're doing at the present moment.
What we're doing right now, we have a very full schedule this summer. In fact, I was looking it over yesterday, and it actually frightens me how full our calendar is. That, in 2021, coming right off the pandemic, we started doing our first public exhibitions.
Okay.
So these are traveling exhibitions or mobile exhibitions. And I think that summer we did about 5 events. Okay, so going from June of 2021 to like October of 2021, so about one a month. This summer we're doing almost 2 a week. So that's really full time.
If somebody wanted to come check out one of your events, are some of them just open to the public?
Some of them are.
Are there any specific ones that we could plug here?
There is. There's one that I would love to plug here. It is the Summer Solstice event. It's Saturday, June 24th.
In conjunction with Summer Solstice.
In conjunction with Summer Solstice. And this is at the Oakland Yacht Club. So this is open to the public. And this would be a great time for people to come out. We'll have everything out at that.
I know that Summer Solstice was started by John Arndt because he was on the podcast. He's been a friend of the podcast. John Arndt is the publisher of Latitude 38. And I know that he's been very involved in the Sailing Science Center. What's the story there?
John's been a huge supporter of ours, really, from the outset. There are a number of things that John has been the first on. We have something we call an endorsement letter. So we're looking into the community for leaders who support what we're doing. John was the first signature on that. So sort of like John Hancock on the Declaration of Independence.
Is his signature as flamboyant?
I'll have to go back and check that. I'm not sure. Another really big thing that John has done for us is he has run a continuous ad for us in the back of Latitude 38 for volunteers. So for a couple of years now, we've had a thing in the back of Latitude 38. And that's helped us get some volunteers, which also takes me back to that. What are the entry points for volunteers? Is that website? And then when we have events like the one at the Oakland Yacht Club, we'll always have a sign-up sheet.
Nice.
We get a lot of sign-ups at those events because people can actually see what we're doing.
Yeah, it's much easier to understand.
But going back to John, in 2021, so it was early 2021, Don Riley's America's Cup campaign, America True, that nonprofit had a trailer that they were using in the late 1990s with an exhibit in it called the Coffee Grinder. This was a really elaborate thing that they built. It was a simulation of a pedestal winch on an America's Cup boat.
Okay.
And a little mini mainsail on it and a timer, an electronic timer. So what you could do is you could raise this mainsail. You could do it either as singles or doubles. And get your time, and then you could compete with all your friends to see who was the strongest. They were organized as a nonprofit, and they were dissolving that nonprofit and didn't know what to do with this thing because it was a really cool piece of equipment. But, you know, Dawn had since moved on. You know, she wanted to find a good home for it. John connected us, and we inherited that, and it's, you know, continues to be one of our most exciting exhibits today. If I can go on a little bit from that, that exhibit came with a trailer. And that trailer, we had already been talking about getting a trailer. And that, you know, immediately solved that problem. So now we were mobile, and we started figuring out how to pack the trailer.
Tell us about some of your favorite exhibits.
Sometimes it's the simplest things.
Yeah.
I actually really like our anchoring exhibit.
Explain it to...
Yeah, so the anchoring exhibit is very simple. It's a rectangular sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 2 feet long and about 10 inches wide and about 10 inches deep, and it's filled halfway with sand. There's a column at one end with rollers on it, and there's a couple of model anchors. And you can set the anchors in the sand, and you have an anchor line. Those who are sailors know that's called a road. So we've got an anchor road and a spring scale. So you set the anchor, and you can put the road over different rollers at different heights, so the angle of pull varies.
Ah.
And what it shows is the importance of the angle at which you're pulling on the anchor to how well it holds.
Uh-huh.
And so you can see it with the spring scale. It also demonstrates that the holding power of an anchor has more to do with its geometry than it does its weight. And this shows it very clearly that one of the model anchors it'll hold more than four times its own weight in the sand when it's dug in correctly.
Wow.
And so this is, you know, as far as understanding how anchors work, you can communicate this in a matter of minutes with this, you know, this very hands-on model.
Yeah. That's so cool. I want to go play with it now. I've seen it before, but I want to test out. Because I'm thinking about anchors and what anchors I'm going to be purchasing. So I'd love to get mini models of them and test them. And then you got to be able to change the substrate so you can see how they do in grass and see how they do in mud. And see,
yeah, we've done some of that. So we have two boxes, and so we can do one wet and one dry. But we also have sand and gravel, so we can do a little bit of that.
So you're still looking for a permanent home, and Treasure Island is still your first choice. Is that right?
Treasure Island is still our first choice. The airplane hangar, Hangar 3, is still our choice. I had the good fortune last week at the ribbon cutting that I mentioned earlier to get to speak with Chris Meany of Wilson Meany, which is the principal developer on the island. And I spoke to him about this, and he said, yeah, it's a few years away. And I said, yeah, that's probably okay. Because we have a big collection we're creating. And, you know, before we get into Hangar 3, we want to add a lot to that collection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. The timing might work out very well then. Before we move on to other topics, I wanted to ask you if there's anything else you want people to know about the Saline Science Center.
We are always looking for volunteers. Mostly, we are looking for volunteers to serve as explainers/docents at all of these events that we're doing. The events are about 75% of them are for school-age kids. At summer camps, sailing camps, YMCA, that kind of thing. So those events are almost exclusively on weekdays.
Okay.
So we need volunteers who can help on weekdays. Usually this means people who are retired.
Yeah.
Not always, but usually. And then on, you know, the other events that are more the public type events, those tend to be on weekends. And then, you know, anybody who's available to volunteer, we need those people.
Very cool. Well, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you, Jim, was that when we met up at Svensson's, I mentioned to you that in the not too distant future, I plan to be cruising with my family, headed south down towards Mexico. And you started telling me some great stories of when you were cruising. I think we were actually talking about anchoring, and you were back to the anchoring, and you were asking, well, how much scope do you have? How much chain do you have? And you were telling me some stories of anchoring. I don't remember in particular, but maybe some. Were there any times when you had trouble?
You know, anchoring is such a big part of cruising,
yeah.
And it's something that people who have not been cruising probably don't fully appreciate. That and batteries.
Two things that I'm deeply steeped in right now, so we're going to get to batteries next.
Anchoring and batteries, because these are the things that you're really using every day.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say that most new cruisers over-index on their storm preparation, and they under-index on anchoring, power management, and light air sailing.
That's what captures the imagination is, oh gosh, I'm going to get out there in a storm, and what do I do? The number of storms you get into hopefully is minimal, but you, like you just said, you're anchoring every day. You're using your batteries every day. So what experiences did you have anchoring that you would hope others would learn from?
Well, you know, what's great about Mexico is Mexico is pretty close to the ideal cruising ground for new cruisers cutting their teeth on anchoring.
Yeah.
Most of the anchorages are within day sails of each other, so you don't have to do a lot of overnight sailing. Most of the holding is very good. There's not a lot of tidal range. I'm talking about the Sea of Cortez here mostly.
Okay.
Sea of Cortez and the west side of the mainland Mexico. What I think of as the ideal anchoring depth is 4 fathoms or 24 feet. Mm-hmm. It's deep enough, but not too deep.
You don't have to put out a ton of scope.
You don't have to put out a ton of scope. In Mexico, bottom's mostly sand and mud, so you have good holding. We only ran into one anchorage while we were there. We were there for over 2 years where there was a lot of weed. That was actually a problem. I remember I dropped some part. I think it was a plug to the drain plug to the oil fill on our outboard motor. So that was kind of a...
And then trying to find it in the
I didn't find it. And it was like the bottom was like about a foot thick of grass. So fortunately it was a standard thread and I was able to, put something else in the hole. That's the cruising life.
Yeah. True.
But that was I think more the exception. We did in Cabo, I'm just thinking about anchoring experiences. In Cabo, we caught our anchor on a rock. We were using a Bruce anchor at the time. And they have a habit, and this happened a few times. If you get just the right size rock, the Bruce anchor looks sort of like a clover leaf with three leaves. They can capture a certain size rock.
I have visions of pulling up more than just the anchor with the Bruce. Yeah,
right. And that's one of the problems with the Bruce. It's overall a pretty good anchor, but if you catch a rock that size, and like I say, we had that happen a couple times, so it's not that rare. Then the anchor really, it can't dig in, and it's pretty worthless then.
I've also had an issue with the Bruce when we went up to the Delta, because the three prongs are more rounded.
Mm-hmm.
We were trying to anchor in a grassy spot,
right,
as you're talking about before. It was just slipping over the grass.
I still have a Bruce anchor, the same Bruce anchor on my boat. But before we left Mexico, we switched over to, it's a plow-style anchor called a spade. And I'll call them the more modern anchor designs are of this type, and they have a sharp point on them that will penetrate weed really well. And they're very good all-round anchors.
Yeah. No pun intended. I mean, I know we're getting in the weeds here, but I find this fascinating, just the figuring out what works where. And I mean, it does go back to the science of it. I mean, part of the sailing is the mechanical, how things work, and you have to understand how the anchor works so you can say, okay, well, this is the kind of conditions we're in, this is what we need.
Yeah, isn't that right? And anchoring's not really that sexy. I don't,
Have you ever seen on YouTube, I haven't watched many of them, but there's a guy who took underwater cameras and did the experiments that you're talking about with the sandbox, but with actual anchors, and there's hours and hours of footage of anchors and how they're holding. It's just...
I don't know if it's the same guy, but I've definitely seen that on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same one that you were looking at. And he does a really good job.
Yeah.
With this. He put a, if it's the same guy, he puts a GoPro down on the bottom while he's changing the direction of pull on the anchor to see what happens. And he developed some, I think, pretty, again, no pun intended, but rock solid conclusions out of that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think one of the reasons you like sailing is because of all of those things that you have to figure out, or is it the other way around? Did sailing get you interested in how things work?
That's a great question, Ben. I think the challenge is really a big part of it. That's what makes it interesting. Not just the challenge, but the variety of challenges.
Yeah.
there are other activities, we can say golf or chess or something like that, where it's basically simple. And so you can learn it quickly, but you can spend your whole life trying to perfect it.
Yeah.
Right? And sailing is like that also.
Yeah.
The basic concepts, I mean, as a sailing instructor, I can, you know, I can teach you to sail in 3 or 4 days, but then you can spend your whole life trying to perfect that.
Yeah. And you can make it as complex or as simple as you want. You could sail in a dinghy. I can sail in a dinghy and be perfectly happy for the rest of my life. Or go cruising and have to learn batteries and anchoring and all number of systems that I find fascinating personally. It's one of the reasons I love sailing is because I'm constantly learning.
And I think that's it. And I think that it's good for us to appreciate the value of those challenges and learning and how stimulating that is.
Yeah.
You know, this is not just step aboard and turn the key. You know, you do have to learn a little bit, and there's a lot of people, and I'm sure you've had this experience, who are getting on a boat for the first time. They will remark that it's a whole new language.
Yes.
And that has to be learned, but that's, you know, that's how sailors communicate.
No, when I used to teach sailing, I used to tell people that was one of the hardest things about sailing, is just learning the new language. Well, this has been so much fun. I really enjoyed getting an update on the Sailing Science Center and hearing a little bit more about where you're at now and where you're headed in the future. Anything that we haven't talked about that you want to touch on?
Do things that challenge you. That is where pride and satisfaction come from. Whatever it is, doing something hard, doing things that are hard and that push you to improve yourself. This is the best way I think there is to build self-esteem. And I would also say, you know, from what we're doing with the Sailing Science Center that we haven't touched on, but that's a really, really important component, is that since you and I last spoke, we crystallized, I think is a good word, what we call our three pillars for the Sailing Science Center.
Oh.
So I think that's what I would leave with, is those three pillars: ocean stewardship, STEM education, and leadership. I think those are the things that matter most.
Great note to end on. Three very worthy things to focus on, and I wish you the best with it.
Thank you, Ben.
That's it for this week's show. Again, if you want to catch up with Jim and see some of the Sailing Science Center exhibits, come on out to the Oakland Yacht Center's Summer Solstice event Saturday, June 24th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. More info for that is online at theoaklandyachtclub.net. And you can find the Sailing Science Center online at sailingscience.org. And just a quick reminder to head on over to Patreon and become an Out the Gate patron for as little as $5 a month. All of you who have already done so, thank you so much. I'm your host, Ben Shaw. Thanks for listening. You can reach me on Instagram at OutTheGateSailing or email me at OutTheGateSailing@gmail.com. Until next time, smooth sailing.